One and all to Team Fight Talk Show, and guess what? It's our last episode of 2021, and what a year it's been. And here we are to finish it all off with myself, Doa as usual, Frodan as well joining us once again, and we have none other, the returning guest, Birdosaurus. First, we'll go to you. How's it going, man? Glad you're back.
It's going all right. Going pretty well. Just finished finals and excited for winter break. So yeah, that's nice. And then I'll be able to.
How'd you do? How'd the grades come out?
Well, I got grades back. There's only one final that really mattered. I don't think I did too well on that one, but it's okay.
You're pretty confident. You started to look down. You started to look a little bit reserved there. Are you confident?
No, not at all.
No? Okay, well, at least we can be confident in your TFT knowledge, and that's why you're here today, so don't worry about the other stuff. Frodan, how are you doing?
Good. My audio settings weren't exactly good, so I switched to the headset, so apologies.
Oh, okay, no worries.
Yeah, everything's great. We had our double up tournament this past weekend. That was pretty fun. This has been like the first couple of weeks that I've been able to play set six for real, and I enjoy it so much. I've missed TFT. The month that I had off was excruciating, but there's a lot of cool things that are coming up. Yeah, it was excruciating. It was great. Getting
sure.
married
all
and
right.
moving and all stuff, it was fantastic, but also not playing TFT sucked. So win some games.
Yeah, no, I can relate to that. I was kind of exiled in South Korea for a couple months, and I love South Korea, but it was tough to play on ping. I had a lot of stuff going on, so I'm ready to start really playing set six for real finally as well. So I feel you. But you know what? Before we go any farther, I think we should take a look at today's augment choices. That's right. This is something that we've recently instituted on the show. You get augments in the game, and guess what? You get augments on Teamfight Talk Show as well. So here are your choices today. We're going to put a poll up in Twitch chat for you to choose. One is Trade Sector. And you know what, Frodan? Why don't you go ahead and go through these for us? Go ahead.
Yeah, so this is our second episode of Set 6. And what we do is, in the flavor and the theme of Gizmos and Gadgets, we're giving the viewers an opportunity to influence the podcast episode for those who are watching and tuning in live. So we have three options, and they're themed after something in the game. So first is Trade Sector after the reroll augment. Once per topic, the host can say refresh, and the person has to repeat what they just said. And we actually don't have the full explanation here, so... we'll have to clarify that in a little bit. The second is item grab bag, where the host puts on some flashy accessory. It's just kind of fun. We'll just grab anything in our closets or something around us. And then three is rich get richer, which is someone famous in chat is gifted a sub. So it's something that is just fun. I'm not entirely sure why we would give rich people more money, but I guess that's what we do as society. So perhaps a social commentary episode.
Who gets to choose who is famous, you know, by the way? Because, like, the definition of fame can be subjective, right? To a certain extent. So, you know.
Yes, exactly.
It doesn't need to be someone famous in the traditional sense.
That's right. So it's just fun stuff for people to have fun with the podcast. Some things are actually impacting the show and some do not have any influence whatsoever. Bert, what are you voting for?
I'd like to see you guys put on some flashy accessories. And also, item grab bag is broken, so. Although I noticed...
You're right.
Item grab bag's tier 1 augment, and the other one are tier 2 augments. But no, honestly, in-game, they could all probably be tier 2 augments.
Who says this isn't item grab bag 2? Oh, actually, the one that gives 2 items is tier 3, so you're right.
Mm. It looks like item grab bag 1. So how are we going to do this? Are we going to do... Okay. See, we never think this far ahead. Are we going to do it right now?
Oh, just grab something that you got.
All right. I'll be right back. I got to go to my closet real quick.
Okay, so Doa goes first, and then I'll come back in just a second here. So, Bert, let's talk a little bit more about how TFT has been so far for the set. How have you been enjoying set 6?
It's been pretty fun. I think that, like, unless you get screwed on augments and, like, don't have any... good choices, like most of the time the game feels the augment feels like, you know, they're impacting your game a lot, especially the eco augments, like and like especially like trying a lot of augments out for the first time feels really, really fun. Like sometimes prismatics, for example, like I know everybody hates like 1-3 prismatics, but like 1-4 prismatics, but I think they're actually, I don't know, I've had fun with them. Like even though like sometimes it just feels like there's nothing you can do to play the game, sometimes it can also be like really fun. You just
All right.
It feels like you're playing a different game.
I have my...
True, I agree. We're talking about Prismatic Oz. Right now, I'm just asking Bert about, you know, his opinions on set 6, because it's been a while checking.
Okay.
So take it from here, Doe, and I'm going to also grab an accessory. Right back.
All right, well, I've selected my leather... I forget the official term, but it's my Renaissance Festival garb. It's pretty great. It's leather. It's got, like, these strings and things like that. If I want to tie it, I have, like, a green, like, Renaissance Festival-looking shirt that goes underneath it, which completes the effect. It makes it look a lot better, and it's a little bit wrinkled, per se. But you get the idea. You know, it keeps the rain off your shoulders when you're riding your stallion through the night to the inn in the next town, you know? You know how it is, Brutosaurus.
Yeah, that's a very common experience.
Yeah, that's right. Like Nature said in chat, +20 armor. But it is, and it's still, I get to maintain my dexterity modifier too, because this is leather armor. It's not metal, so it doesn't slow me down. It doesn't slow my casting speed at all or anything like that. And that is a hat. Wow. Nice.
It is.
What? Is that poop?
Yeah.
How dare you?
I'm just curious.
It is a question. It is a turd.
Nice. All right.
Yes, because it appropriately resembles the one of the nicknames I get called often is Poopy Head. So.
Wow, that's unfortunate. I thought you were dressing up like my LOL chess profile.
That is also a double. It does as a cosplay of your LOL chess profile.
Okay, good. Brutosaurus, you don't have to do this.
Yeah.
But if you do have anything,
you are a guest. You can feel free to join us if you'd like.
I guess I can get something. Let
me see. Okay. All right. We'll hold on to Fort while you're gone.
All right. Why don't we talk about Set 6 News while he's he's getting the stuff.
Let's do it. So Mort ran a Twitter poll on what the most OP comp was. Actually, it was more of the poll. It was a tournament. It was a huge bracketed tournament. It went down to the results.
Yeah.
Oh wow, that's perfect, man.
This is what I got for my Halloween costume. It's just a waffle costume. It was like the easiest costume I could think of. So like for very casual, like, you know, you want to keep the Halloween spirit up.
Yeah.
Kind of costume, but like I'm not good enough to make like actual elaborate costume. So not this.
It's a pretty legit waffle costume. Yeah, that's fine.
Thank you so much for participating in this.
Yeah.
You
mentioned it,
right,
and
there.
Then I just looked over, and I just had this from October.
It was sitting there since October?
Well, for Halloween, yeah. I just kind of left it in my closet after. I didn't know what to do with it after Halloween was over.
I mean, you keep it for reasons like this.
True,
you, see, there that's you wise. A lot of people would have thrown that waffle costume away, but you knew you'd get use from it in the future.
Yeah.
That's looking ahead.
It's good planning.
That's the strong late game econ, yeah. Well, let's talk about this bracket for the most OP comp voted by Twitter. The winner ended up being a Static Shiv Divine Warwick, which, why wouldn't it be? Warwick was Warwick, right?
Yeah, that was quite a patch. I did not play that patch.
Is it the most OP comp in TFT history, though? Yeah, it was a terrible week. Yeah, it may go down as one of the most infamous weeks ever in TFT, but it was only a week. Some of these comps we get to deal with the entire set. And
true.
They were oppressive from start to finish, and they did not really get fixed no matter how many times they got nerfed or changed. Hmm.
What would your choice be then?
So I thought that from set one, Void Assassins would go there, or the other contender would have been Blender Nocturne from set two. I think these were particularly egregious. And with like a nod to Mech Infiltrators. I think Mech Infiltrators is like particularly really, really powerful as well. Just for like, it's like everything, right? Like when you talk about like the greatest, right? And it's funny because I actually did this category for Hearthstone on another article where I'm like, they asked me to put like, who are like the greatest or most influential people of all time? Like, well, there's so many categories. There's like dominance, power, and there's also like longevity. And that really comes into equation. Warwick was like 5 days, like not even really, right? It was like, it was changed. Some things you have to deal with for months. And that really stands out to me as like oppressive because so many things tried to beat it and it couldn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I think those are all good options. And other ones that come to mind that maybe weren't like the most OP comp, but were certainly like a plague to deal with, do you remember the Disarm Sivir build? Where she just like, yeah, you remember that? Where she just disarmed your entire team? Yeah,
another set two.
Set two. I would say if you could pick a set that had the most OP comps, it was probably set two.
Blademaster Azir, that comp was crazy.
Blademaster, Blademaster, anything really.
Yeah, it was some sins. Like some sins were always, I remember, always good. But then there's just that one thing where like Blademasters were just insane. You go Blademaster Azir, put your all these items on Sivir so that you, the opponent couldn't do anything. I remember there's like the mana one as well.
Yeah, there's also
The mana printer in set three. That was another one.
Yeah.
Was that set four?
No, set three. You're talking about the galaxies. Because in set four, they started changing to blue buff. And blue buff was different from the Seraphs that we used to build. But I want to talk about something bigger, which was the fact that people voted for set six Katarina to be able to go all the way to the quarterfinals, which I think is just so indicative of how little people really understand things in the big picture of TFT.
And I'm not bias.
I'm not here to just like flame the general player base. I'm here to just talk about the fact that people really are just exactly what you said. There's so much recency bias into how they frame things that it's so hard to take player feedback seriously when they really, when there's a group of people that legitimately think that set six Katarina should go this far. It shouldn't even be in this bracket. Katarina wasn't even the best comp on the patch that it was supposed to be dominant upon.
It was incredibly broken on 3-2, and then like if you hit all your three stars, you can win the game. But I think like the one of the main, like for me at least, OP things about it is just it was the strongest comp by far on stage 3 and stage 4, and you just get destroyed by it. And so it'd be really frustrating to play against if you like rotated into it, and then like because you're just streaking for, you know, the mid game, you're top 4 most of the time. And then obviously you can still cap the comp up, but yeah, like I'm looking at this bracket, like I'm surprised it would beat like Giant Stare Mordekaiser. I don't know which Mordekaiser patch it is, but
I wonder if you. I bet though, if you did like a poll of what set people started playing in, you know, it would probably skew more towards a lot of people having never played the older sets, and so they just didn't experience the stuff too. Or it's also the recency bias, right? Like the hurt of Katarina in set six is sharp and fresh, whereas the hurt from a Blender is, you know, is old and dull but still memorable. So you've got that
fair enough. Yeah. Either way, I think this is really interesting because it just kind of reaffirms that Mortdog and Kent and Static and T should just never really source Twitter for opinions on stage. Let's just agree upon that.
Everyone already knew anyway, but here's just extra confirmation, I guess. There you go.
Yeah.
Congratulations. Well, let's move on to some other news. And, if one TFT podcast wasn't enough, how about another TFT podcast?
That's right.
Don't talk if you don't know. Frodan, why don't you tell us a little bit about this?
Yes, a week from today will be the debut of a new podcast, a new TFT podcast that me and Bryce Blum will be hosting called Don't Talk If You Don't Know. It's a podcast that's dedicated purely to debating who are the top players in each region. We're going to first start off our series on North America. And so we're going to be, since that's mainly the players that we pay attention to and we're friends with, you know, if it goes well, we'll probably expand to EU. But for now, we've identified a problem, which is in TFT, it's so hard to identify who are the top players. And so what we do, we usually just gravitate towards LP. That's because we just don't have enough tournament data. We don't have enough, even like ladder data itself is like quite biased because some players run it down. A lot of people are streaming. Like Soju, for example, is just streaming nonstop Merc openings. He's not actually trying to climb. And so how do you actually rank them? So what we did is we grabbed some of the best and brightest in North America. We have almost a dozen panelists. We're all going to be voting. It's a mixture of players and people like casters. And it's just really a good group of people. We'll publish it all very transparently. It's not going to be like, how did we come to this? You know, how did this person get ranked one? How ranked five? We're going to publish everybody's votes. And then we're going to have people come onto the show and justify how they ranked players. And then we're going to be arguing, debating, should this player be top five? Does this player not even be on this list? It's going to be a really good time. And this is Bryce and my favorite topic to debate, period. Because we love talking about people like Bert. We love talking about people like Nubal and Setsuko and Spencer and how they stack against Keen, Soju, Milk, and all of them. It's going to be a really good time. So make sure you come by. And we're going to be publishing it as an official article with esports.gg as well. So I'm really excited about this, and that's why Bryce is in chat right now. He showed up on time for the first time in months, because we're really excited to talk about this podcast. So.
He's passionate about his opinions. It's true. It's good because you're good opinions. I like
that's
him.
That's right. That's right.
It's gonna be fun to watch. I'm looking forward to it. Let's move on to the meta 11.24. That's right. The patch is here, and it's already gone because we already have a B patch. But here's 11.24 anyway to take a look at things. And this was a big one. I mean, we knew that there was going to be a longer break between this patch and the next one because of the holidays, obviously. So a lot was included in this one. Bertasaurus, I want to get your initial opinions on the initial 11.24 patch, and then we can kind of move into the B patch with that.
I think in the initial 11.24 patch, I think obviously Mutants was really strong, and I just think that, like, I don't know, I played it a few times with just getting, because I usually don't force it, but like I got unstable, so I just went for it. And some of the augments, like if you get the right augments for it, it felt really insane. So I think I thought that was particularly strong in the meta, and then also there's obviously the five costs, Akali, Galio, Kai'Sa, Victor. So I didn't play the patch that much, but I thought that it seemed like there's still a lot to figure out, and to be honest, like my initial thoughts or my initial impression of the patch probably isn't completely correct. But that's just like kind of what stood out to me at the beginning, or like what stood out to the people I was talking to.
Okay.
In particular. I think I thought a lot of the changes were good though. Like the I think the augment changes were really, really nice. I think the innovator changes, obviously, like not being able to force innovators from early on was really good. And then also the augments that give you units now was really good, because you could even just take augments for units. Like, for example, you could take Scrap to get an Echo upgrade, and then like you could just kind of have it, so you could play tempo with them. Because a lot of the, especially like the worst trade augments, especially, like you take them, you're behind tempo because you're forced to like kind of play around these augments, and you can't like play around just the units that you hit. And then it's just pretty rough, but now it's like pretty nice, I think.
Yeah,
cool.
I would say that there's some really interesting choices behind which units they get. For some traits, it's just absolutely bonkers. You mentioned Scrap and Echo. That's definitely one of the best ones. You can get a Leona with Bodyguard, which is also kind of nuts. Yeah. And then for Twin Shot, you get Graves. And it's like, one is not like the others, man. I don't know.
I was wondering about that. I was wondering about how they went about determining, you know, which ones you get. I mean, if you think about Twin Shot, I guess, you know, you're looking at maybe like Gangplank, right? For the other option for a three or less cost Twin Shot. And like, then you maybe open up Mercenaries as being a little bit too easy for people to achieve early. So I kind of get it, but the traits do make this implementation maybe a little bit awkward. But overall, I really like the change. I think it's much better than it was. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say that they wanted, their decision was that they didn't want to have too many repeats, right? So they didn't want to give Kog'Maw for Twin Shot and Mutant, and so they had
that's too strong.
But then they also gave Echo for both, I believe, Assassin and Scrap, and Echo's just too sick.
Right.
So he's like one of my favorite champions in the set.
I think it's really good. It is nice though, because it helps a little bit with balancing, because one of the issues with balancing augments is like, how are you supposed to balance like some of these trade augments? Because there's like not very many changes you can do. Like for units, for example, there's so many numbers on them. You can nerf their stats, increase their like whatever numbers they have, their mana. With the traits, like if a trait, so for example, like scrap heart, like how it seems pretty hard to balance, because a lot of these augments, like you can try to balance them by like changing their tier, but that's such a huge change that like, you know, it doesn't really work for pretty much all augments. Like for example, only a very few augments have been balanced that way, like March they did, and then the Clockwork one they did that. It's nice because like you can just, I think that's what they're trying to do, like Scrap, they're giving a better cost, better unit, higher cost, to make it like kind of make up for it.
It's true.
Yeah, makes sense to me. Yeah, like I said, I really like the change overall. I after playing 11.24 since it's come out, the ability to pick those augments I think feels a lot more comfortable because again, like you pick it, you at least have the trait online in most cases, and you get either 1 to 3 gold depending on what champion you get to it, or just a champion you need for your board anyway. So it feels a lot better to pick those options versus all the other augments you're offered. But let's take a look at the B patch. So the B patch came out yesterday, actually. It's usually a Wednesday thing, but this time it was a Tuesday thing, and some things had to be adjusted. You can see Galio got a little bit of a nerf. Some items took some hits that were a bit of a problem. Protector obviously was very strong. It's a lot of stuff geared towards some of the reroll comps we saw, and then some of the stuff that was a little bit too strong on the high end. I feel like it smoothed things out a little bit more. Frodan, what do you think?
The B patch was incredibly necessary. When
Yeah.
there was a couple of compositions, as Bert was referencing, he said he didn't get to play much on it. I think I played too much on it. I think it was just so difficult for me because I think I had to. I felt like I had to compensate for lost time, so I just kept jamming games whenever I had a free moment, and just running into a Protector Emblem Cho'Gath was obnoxious. The
Oh, yeah.
fast 8 Akali lotteries where you would get triple Socialite. It'd be like Galio 1, Seraphine 1, Akali 1, Taric 1, random pivot with Archangel Staff and a GA would like completely destroy my all 2-star board that I was like tempoing the whole time. It just felt really obnoxious. And the most difficult part about it was that their augments were nuts. Like they would have Ascension. Ascension was buffed to appear more in your shop and underdogged. And so they'd be okay playing Colossus units. And because Guardian Angel and these units that get out of aggro range, with Akali or Kai'Sa dashing out of the way, Ascension was almost procced like every single time guaranteed, and they would wake up from GA and completely one-shot your team and heal up to full because of Socialite 3. It was so
Right.
obnoxious to the point where like just people were like, oh, the people were saying they were legitimately wanted Katarina to come back at that point, which I they just clearly did not know. Again, see the above topic. They don't know what they're talking about. But I think that like the biggest change for me is just it feels good to have my units target again, like correctly. Some people are like, why did Tristana all of a sudden become much more viable to cost reroll? It's like because she stopped griefing halfway through, where she like randomly shot a different target with her ability. So the aggro target fix was like a huge deal. And that's probably the biggest thing about 1124, in my opinion.
Yeah, I was yelling at the screen a lot early on in the set, and that's definitely so. It's definitely died down a bit now, but I gotta say I am a little bit sad. I know it's a change that needed to happen, but doing a reroll cog, not cog, reroll Cho'Gath was probably one of the most fun builds I played in a while. I would just do it every game, and Cho'Gath would get gigantic and eat people, and it was just a fun build. I have no other explanation. It was just a fun build. It definitely needed to be nerfed, but I was a little bit sad to see it go. It's still there. It's just not as easily forcible every game. You can still definitely do it though.
Yeah, I'd say that this B patch, everything is still playable. Akali is still playable. Protector reroll with Ligmaw is still playable. I mean, Clapio is still barely playable under the right circumstances. I'm sad that they keep not nerfing the Clapio aspect of Galio, but it's still really
Yeah,
good.
why can't we just have Clapio? Why can't we just enjoy that, you know?
Clapio is fun, yeah. I remember I was trying to I was like practicing duos with Spencer and I mean this was last patch, but every game he'd just be like, I wanna play Clapio. So I'm trying to play Clapio.
Everybody does. If you see the galley, you got the items, just do it. You're like, oh, I had a fully loaded djinn. Nah, drop that stuff. Throw it on the Galio. Bert, what do you think of B patch?
I think it's also really nice I mean basically they're just kind of adjusting for what
Yeah.
was broken last like before the B patch. And I also I also do think that some of these units, like for example the Akali nerfs, I think are really nice because I think like the problem with Akali really was how broken she was at 1-star. Like I don't mind a 5-cost being particularly broken at 2-star. Sure, like you can still nerf it and it would be fine, but if people are hitting 2-star 5-costs and they're winning, like okay, sure. But it's just like when they have the 1-stars and they're destroying your entire team with it is when it gets like really frustrating and it feels unbalanced. So yeah, and I think also the mutant stuff. I think like I think it was a bit too annoying, I'd say, like when they hit 3 stars and you just can't really it's like really hard to beat them if once they hit their 3 stars and they're just like you look at their board and you're like, I'm never beating this. Like you're scouting around, you see like somebody has a Ligmoth comp with 3 stars, and then somebody else has like Akali, and it's just like GG. Like I'm not winning against these guys. But yeah, I think like it definitely feels like they're still like what I was saying, they're still playable, but have like more weaknesses and can't be forced, and so that's obviously a lot more healthy. And I also do think that like the fact if they're forceable, it makes it like a lot worse for the meta because I mean this is similar to like Chosen, like in set 4 when Chosens were like if a reroll comp was broken without the correct Chosen, then like when you did have the correct Chosen, it was completely unbalanced. And so it felt kind of the same way for like for example Mutant reroll. If you get like the insane augments for it, then it felt like not balanced at all. I was yeah like I mentioned I was playing like Mutants with unstable, and it felt like really strong. I don't know.
Right. It's because it seems when you have a bunch of like low cost, especially one cost reroll in the meta, it accelerates the pace of the game so much that if you don't have a strong board early, and you're going for like a normal pacing of the game, you know, you're looking for those four cost carries and things like that, you'll just lose so much HP in like stage three, stage four, right? That you're just gonna bot four, right? So I think that's the thing that always bugs me when we're in that kind of meta. I don't like the one cost reroll metas that much because I feel like it accelerates the pace of the game too much. So I'm glad this B patch kind of addressed some of that.
It was not necessarily even just that as I mean there was definitely a little bit elements of that in the previous patch, but like this patch part of the issue was that it was also slowing things down. Everyone was picking Ascension and they're playing Colossus units, and therefore damage was reduced significantly. So that actually gave a ton of people opportunities to greed and have more gold to roll, and as a result everyone basically had this re like basically get to 40 gold on level 8 and then just roll for one cost variations of whatever you need. And it just kind of led to like other different degenerate metas in the other direction where like it encouraged people to greed so much because so many fights would just be a Cho'Gath fighting like a Kassadin. And that would be like, and then they deal like 4 damage to each other, and then like everyone's like at 70 HP and rolling down at level 8. I was like, what? This is crazy. This is compared to the previous patch where like 2 people were dying before stage 4 and like half the lobby was dead in the middle of stage 5. Some of that still exists from time to time, but right now it feels much better. Right now it feels like we're in the 4-cost flex again. There's a lot of 3-cost reroll. People are trying a lot of Samira and Shaco at the moment. As we mentioned, a bunch of 2-cost, like you know, Warwick is still like coming back in. Protector is still fine at 1 and 2 cost. So I think right now the meta feels healthy. It could be just the first day post B patch, but I much prefer this right now, and I'm happy that this is what we have for the holidays for now. We'll see.
Yeah, that's a dangerous statement to make one day after the B patch, but you added the for now at the end, so it's okay. We'll see how it develops. Let's move on now to everybody's favorite segment. It is agree, and we're gonna start off with our first agree question. You should be able to reroll one of your augments somewhere during a game. Birdosaurus, agree?
I'm gonna go with disagree for now because I mean it's just it's like I think I could see it, but like it's pretty. Or wait, do you mean like yeah? So you mean like you took an augment and you get to reroll it like later on?
I guess so, yeah. It doesn't matter. I
Yeah.
mean, if
you do agree, when would it be? Like that's kind of like the follow-up question to that.
Yeah, I think it's just like a very like I'm just thinking about like what kind of augments it would be used on, and it's just like the ability of it very. It almost feels like an insane buff to some augments, and I don't know. I think like maybe in the future like. But like right now, it would completely change like the balance of some of the augments. Like for example, Hyper Roll, for example, March of Progress, and then like on the other hand, like how would rerolling item grab bag work or something like that? Yeah, I would just go with disagree for now. But I like maybe it would work.
Bert is
All right.
thinking so hard about this. Such an interesting creative
I'm not
decision.
sure. I'm like, is his audio cutting out, or is he just like
Nah, he's
deep in
thinking.
thought? Like,
Yeah,
what's
deep in
going on
thought. Yeah,
here?
just kind of
All
thinking.
right. Well, it sounds like it's a disagree, but
Yeah,
yet a little bit of an agree in there. Might be a little tiny, a little agree check mark in there.
Yeah.
I think right. I think it's interesting. I think the way I would like to implement reroll would be before you make your choice. So I think, like, for example, when you select your augments, you can still interact with your board. I think this is something that I'm surprised few people know. When I like, I run a Discord server where I coach a lot of people, and they're like Diamond or Masters players, and they still don't even know that you can hide the options and move your board and like shuffle around and stuff like that. I wonder if there's an opportunity for like some kind of item to come in to give you a chance to reroll your augment. I think that would be more interesting, as opposed to simply like Bert said, pick March of Progress once you hit level 7 or 8 or whatever you want, then just reroll, and it's like, well, that just sounds broken. Because you're just capitalizing on something that was temporarily strong, and then when it has no use for you, you obviously will ditch it. So I think that's a much more interesting way to go about it. And I think I would like that better than if 6.5 just said, well, now you get 4 augments. You know, I think I feel like that would be a little bit crazy, because that feels like a way that can add too much bloat. So I'm kind
it feels
of
like a for fun end of the set thing is to add like get 4 augments in there or something, you know?
Yeah. So I think based off that, I'm leaning towards agree, just because that would be the way I would implement it. But it's not a very solid one. You can convince me otherwise.
All right. I think I'm going to have to go with disagree on this one. I think the focus of the set is making these big decisions, you know, around the augments, and then once you've made that decision, how can you react to what you're given afterwards to, you know, fit that augment, or, you know, continue building on what you've already built and the augment already fits into that, right? So being able to reroll that, I agree with what Bryce is saying in chat, where if it was a thing, it would have to be a thing you can reroll before choosing. For one, that avoids a bunch of tech issues that would pop up with, you know, swapping your augment after you've already picked it. But the other thing too is you know, that choice should be meaningful, right? And you should be kind of, I think, like, you should be stuck with it too, in a certain extent, because it's supposed to influence the rest of your game, right? So I mostly disagree. I'm maybe like a tiny little agree checkmark in there too, but I think I'm pretty solidly on the disagree side for now, because I like big decision points that are meaningful in the games. So that'll be my final thought on it. Let's move on to question number 2 for agree. It is going to be trait-based crowd control, immunity, and damage reduction are too difficult to balance. Brontosaurus, agree?
It sounds like just like Colossus.
I guess that does include a lot of that.
It is.
Yeah.
However, we have had previous trait that does stuff like this, like Cavaliers from set 5 or Verdant.
Yeah.
True.
Verdant. And they actually had different problems, right? Verdant was entirely useless, and damage reduction on Cavaliers was way too strong. So it was like, in general, it seems like these traits are difficult to balance. And I saw conversations emerge around it saying, when are we getting rid of damage reduction? When are we getting rid of CC immunity? Just, these are just problematic things that we haven't been able to tackle effectively, because they either feel like that. They either feel broken or kind of just not that important or useless.
So I feel like a lot of the time, like, too difficult to balance is almost like strange to me, because a lot of times I feel like it's almost, the game is pretty almost self-balancing, like, because of the way, because like not everybody can play like the same comp, and there aren't very many comps or metas that have completely broken that. So for example, like Warweek is an example of like something that like maybe broke that. But like, I think a lot of times, like when people are like talking about something being way too broken, you just force this every game, it's a bit of an overstatement, because I think those are the types of like metas where there's actually something that's like sleeper OP, not because the comp is strong, but because you can play like differently and not have to like play the same way as everybody else. And it's more easy to like get a better placement. Because like if everybody's like doing the same thing, then, you know, some other units are open, some other like tempos for the game are open. But like, I guess I would probably agree, because I guess compared to other traits or other things you get from traits, these are much more difficult to balance. So so to talk about like these in particular, like damage reduction is pretty insane, because like it basically stacks with every type of tank. I guess it also does depend on what the units are. because, like, for example, with the Colossus being CC immune, like, it doesn't feel like that crazy, because a lot of them, most of the time, they function as tanks, except for Clapio, which feels pretty strong, but then at the same time, like, you know, it's kind of have to have a two star too, or like when it's like you just like you can nerf like Clapio's like ability to do damage, like, so as they've been doing, like nerfing its attack damage and stuff like that.
Right.
So I don't know. I think like it does depend on what the units are as well. But I guess these are like, I would say like I agree in the sense that they're more difficult to balance than other traits.
Okay. What do you think, Frodan?
I think Burr said a lot of great things, and I don't want to just necessarily repeat what he said. So I think I'm going to just simply disagree, because I think there has been examples of like the fact that we can have CC immunity and damage reduction be important. But, I think that they are things to be done sparingly and not something to be prominently featured. And it did feel like for a couple of sets now, we've had like a defining like tank, like these are the tanks that just reduce damage. And I think I think we haven't necessarily struck the correct balance of it, but I do think that it's not too difficult to do it right now. So overall, I definitely hear the complaints that people have with CC immunity and damage reduction. I think these are two things that should be done maybe for 1.5 set. Like, I don't think it should be something that's prominently featured in like the entire time, in my opinion.
Okay. I kind of feel both ways on this. I feel kind of disagree and agree on it. Because I agree with Frodan in that I don't think it's presented a massive problem for the game overall yet to have these mechanics in there. However, I do think they are more difficult to balance than the other ones, and I do feel like those mechanics are kind of crutches in place of what could be more interesting mechanics than just that, right? So I feel like if we did get rid of this, we would see more interesting things in there, right? And you can look at it both ways, right? Where it's like, you know, building a trap claw lets you corner your Djinn and he won't get hooked by Blitzcrank, right? And so it's like, oh, that makes it kind of boring, because then you don't have to pay attention to positioning as much. But at the same time, you are investing two item components to get that privilege, right? So you are paying to do that in some cases. But at the same time, I kind of like that you have to sort of like play suboptimally a lot of times with your carries and move them into positions where they're not going to do ideal damage, but that's okay because positioning is a big part of the game. People focus on backline carries a lot with that, but frontline carries are pretty similar, right? Where sometimes you might need to move someone to the second row or move them off to the side so they don't take aggro first. That also means they're taking a little while to walk into the fight, so they're going to get less damage that way too. So every amount of positioning reduces your optimal result of your board in some way. So I don't think having to do that is a bad thing, and so I would be fine with CC immunity and damage reduction being out of the game. But I do agree that them being in there isn't like the biggest problem in the world. It's not something I lose sleep over. So give me an agree and a disagree. I'm going to be solidly okay. Non-committal to this. 100% non-committed to this question.
Excellent.
That's rolling up. Let's take a look at question number 3. It's going to be showing up in just a moment. There it is. It's okay for one-star legendary units to be able to carry your team late game. Oh boy, this is an incendiary one. Brutosaurus.
Yeah, I'm going to go with nope.
Easy disagree?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's fine if they're adding a lot of, like, value to your team and, like, doing a lot, like, Yuumi. I think Yuumi is still too broken, but, like, buying a lot of CC. Or, for example, for, like Jace to provide Shred. I remember, like, Yone in set 4, to shred, like, insane amounts of shred. Like, it's fine for units to do that, although Yone was still too broken back then. But, like, I just don't think if your one-star legendary is, like, your primary damage source and, like, doing the most damage on your team and you're winning fights with that, then, I don't think that's...
Okay.
I just don't think that's balanced. Yeah.
Makes sense to me. Frodan, what do you think?
I agree that it's okay if the tempo of the game was consistent, but it's not. Some games, a one-star legendary is pretty much the top end that anybody will be able to hit because it's fairly aggressive. this is actually pretty common in situations where like there's like a prismatic lobby, and sometimes it'll be like by the time you can reasonably try to aim for legendary units, the game might already be set in stone. So you see people play really aggressive, right? And this is actually really prominently featured in Chinese and Korean metas. I watched a, so I don't know if anybody got a chance to hear to watch it, but I got a chance to spectate some of the Korean qualifiers for Worlds for set six. And man, they play so aggressive that like finding a 2-star 4 cost is like finding a 2-star 5 cost for them. It's like, because they have to play these like really janky boards. I linked a screenshot of Bebe winning his final lobby in the first round of 128, where he had like 5 1-stars and like 3 2-stars, and that was his level 8 board, and that was good enough to take a first place. So like, in this scenario, absolutely. When the tempo of the lobby is so fast that a legendary unit is a big deal at 1-star, then by all means, because everybody else is the same way. And if you play other auto battlers, it actually is replicated. But I would say for the vast majority of the time, it's not, because of the way TFT is paced. And so I would have to disagree. I preface this all under the one scenario that it's okay. But for the most part, it doesn't feel that good. And it, that, and the majority of the player base doesn't play that type of game.
Yeah, I think I'm going to disagree with this one too. And I don't really have a whole lot to add to what Frodan and Brontosaurus said. I think you want your 5 costs to be strong, because if they aren't strong, then why would you ever sell the item carrier that would theoretically be giving items to it in the first place? You would just ignore all the 5 costs. So they do need to be strong, I think. But I agree with Dan in that it's a matter of consistency, right? Because right now we have 5 costs that are, you know, definitely able to do that, and 5 costs that definitely can't do that, right? But it's still hard to hit those two star five costs that can get to where a 1-star 5 cost currently is. So if it was consistent, I'd be fine with it, but it's usually not, and that's just a matter of it being really unfathomably hard to balance all that. So I'm gonna have to disagree, but there's a world where it could be okay. But let's move on to our final agree question right now. The TFT and League of Legends clients should be separated into different clients and patch schedules so that we can fix things like the targeting bug. Brontosaurus, agree.
So I don't know like too much about like how the client works and stuff, but like I guess I'll probably just agree, because I'm assuming like the implication is that if there are different clients, and you can make a lot more changes to TFT without having to like, because I think like what I heard was like it's expensive to like push out a patch mm-hmm. to, because it's putting out a patch to all of the League client as well. So yeah, I guess. Yeah, it's definitely like, assuming that this does actually allow them to like fix things like the targeting bug a lot faster, then for sure, like I would be down to have a different client. Yeah, fixing all the like all those bugs were like they impact the game so much, and just being able to like fix them easily is, I think, pretty
true. Frodan, agree?
This was pretty hard because it's not such a simple thing. There's significant trade-offs for doing it. For one thing, working on a separate client means that the TFT devs have less time to work on other things like the game itself. So there's like a resource trade-off. There's also like a very difficult trade-off that is very hard to measure from our perspective. It's easier for Riot to do it because they have all the data. But there is like a very important fact that League of Legends Summoner's Rift is also paired together very closely with League of Legends : TFT, the game mode. And I think that, you know, like Arcane, for example, is something that greatly benefited TFT for being in the client and being able to get these, you know, free Jace, Jinx, and Vi'ah Arcane skins, put them into your profile. You get to be able to cross-reference them. There's so much like promotional strength that comes from TFT and League being so closely linked, as well as just like the clout. So it feels kind of like this classic, like, do you join like FaZe Clan for the clout? Or do you join like this other org for the money? You know, and it's like, I don't know. Like, it's just, there's all kinds of trade-offs. I think partially right now, TFT is in a phase where it needs to continue to grow in terms of exposure and people to just continue to find the game fun. And I feel like separating it from the League of Legends client would be a giant mistake, because I think that'll definitely turn people off from playing. And ultimately, games like TFT aren't going to thrive off of how many people are watching. Morth made that very clear. It's not a KPI for them. The viewership on Twitch or YouTube is not the most important thing, although it's relevant. I think what really keeps TFT alive is an active player base. And I think the League client is a way to ensure that for now that TFT will always have that. So I think that at the moment, my answer is no, even though the target bug is really freaking annoying. So I would say disagree.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna have to disagree as well. And it's a hard thing for me to disagree because I would like to imagine that TFT could stand on its own. I don't think it can yet. What I think, honestly, the game needs more than anything is League of the whole Riot client, the whole League of Legends client, and TFT just needs a total revamp. I mean, it's working on over a decade old code. It's like, you know, I've said it before, it's like the bowels of Coruscant down there, like 1,000 meters below the shiny, beautiful, pristine surface is just this massive, like, wires and cabling and pipes, and no one knows what it does or who made it or anything like that. And so at some point, I think there's just going to need to be, yeah, I mean, it's working for now, but like at some point, it's just going to need to be 100% revamped. And like, that's a monumental task. And I'm sure nobody wants to think about it, but like, I think that's really what we need more than anything. Whether that'll ever happen or not, you know, who knows? There could be like League of Legends worlds going in like 2060, where the client is then like, you know, over half a century old, and people's grandparents like can't even remember like who made the first line of code. You know, it's gonna be like some arcane text at that point.
I do want to say one thing is that a TFT exclusive client does exist because it's mobile. Mobile has its own like TFT currency. It exists. And that does show that they are thinking about that kind of stuff. And also, I know I've been told many times that they've explored the idea of redoing the client many times in League history. I'm sure they sunk millions of dollars into an empty project in that before. So it's not easy, apparently.
Who knows? Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, it's working for now, but yeah, it almost seems like it's sort of like TFT and Summoner's Rift are like conjoined twins, where it's like they're separate beings, but you really they're still attached in a very meaningful way, right?
Yep.
So, can you ever separate them? Is it good to separate them? Not sure. Either way, it's an interesting thing to talk about. That is our agree segment. Always tons of fun. Let's go to everyone else's favorite segment, which is esports. Now, the big esports news is a tournament that you casted last weekend, the Giant Slayer Lab Partners Tournament, the first big, as far as I know, duos tournament. And to the shock of absolutely no one in the world, Ramblin Robin ended up winning the tournament, playing, you know, I think they kind of figured out what meta is developing in duos much quicker than everyone else. Again, not too surprising because they've done so well at this style of play in the past. I watched a bit of it. I didn't get to watch all of it over the weekend. But I was going to ask you first, Frodan, what was your experience like casting the tournament?
Casting Double Up is really chaotic because there's so much more that you have to account for. For one thing, whenever you watch a POV, you're only getting half the story. And you have to try to extrapolate based off of it. It's really interesting, though, because I think Double Up, in my mind, I always knew that there was more to be shown than what I watch on people's stream. Whenever I watch people queue in Double Up, it just looked really, like, ridiculous. It was just, like, really degenerate stuff happening. Players who were just, like, talking over each other. It just felt very chaotic and didn't, like, feel like I was following it. And some people love that, right? They think it's funny because half the time when you see like Soju doing with press event, they're just arguing with each other and just laughing. And I was kind of expecting a little bit of that. But I think what we saw on day number two, particularly with Robin and Ramblin, was like really understanding how to work with each other in a way that you can't really get in solo queue. That feels very rewarding. And it just shows, right? They got 4 firsts and 1 second, and they theoretically should have won game 4 as well because what happened was Ramblin was trying to make the Zephyr, but he only dropped one component and it turned to a scrap item before he could do that. And so that cost him the fight and that would have gotten first place. So like, you know, these kinds of, so they should have been in first place, but the way they showcase like how to line up your strategies shows that there's more to Double Up than I thought. And so I really enjoyed casting it personally. It was very, very fun.
It was a ton of fun to watch too. Bertasaurus, did you get a chance to check any of it out?
I didn't watch it too much, no, but
he played in it.
I played in the first day, yeah. And the second, but we didn't actually really get to play Double Up. But yeah.
I didn't see those games.
No. Don't worry about it. Joe.
Exposed.
No, it was a joke because the first day of competition, We didn't actually get to play Double Up because the Tournament Realm was down.
Oh, it was that day. I heard about that.
There's like a bug on the Tournament Realm or something.
And I did hear about that. I didn't watch that day anyway. Turns out it wasn't truly Double Up anyway. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry that's how it worked out.
It's okay. We'll move on. The point that we're trying to take away is two things. One, Double Up has a ton of potential as a competitive format. I even tweeted out that I think it should get its own thing, like entire circuit, which would be really cool. And there's the Hextech Havocs coming out.
Totally agree.
Which we see. And the second thing is Ramblin's still a free agent and no one has signed him. So definitely anyone who's listening and paying attention to, hit up Ramblin because this man is doing, he's killing it in solo tournaments as well as duos tournaments.
Yeah, I retweeted that guy today. I mean, some org has to pick him up. He's too good to remain on the sidelines any longer as far as being on an esports organization. But yeah, the Hextech Havoc announcement, of course, like more Double Up, which is pretty exciting. I totally agree with you, Froden. I think this is a game mode that deserves its own separate sort of tournament year, you know, tournament set life cycle. Some regions are tying it into qualifications for Worlds and things like that, and that's a whole nother conversation to have. But I would love a world where we have at TFT Worlds each set a solo tournament with its own qualifications and a Double Up tournament with its own qualifications, and some of the players in each can, you know, obviously overlap. We wouldn't be running these at the same time, but it'd be cool to include both of that going forward.
Yes,
I think I was talking, like, when Double Up first came out, I was talking to like Gooms and like Spencer and Setsuko and people. I just think that, and not even like having its own thing, I think it has the potential to become like the main thing or like for competitive esports for TFT. Just because I think the complexity of Double Up is a lot higher than the complexity of solo queue or like just playing by yourself. Just because there are so many other factors that add in, like, and there's so many other like strategies that you can do. Just purely by the fact that, you know, you're basically almost having double the decisions and more. Because with two players, and then also like having like teamwork, I think it's a teamwork is also like a huge thing in Double Up that I think a lot of players like maybe not may not realize. Just because like it's so if you're working around your items correctly, like it's so much easier to get like really good items for both players. But at the same time, you want to like keep up with matching tempo, so you have to like know like what items to like, you know, allocate to each player, stuff like that. Also, just like a lot of times your partner can't tell you everything that, you know, they can end up playing. They can't tell you like all the units that they can make use of, and so like you also have to be looking at your partner's board and like knowing what your partner's comfortable with playing. And then so like when you see some unit, like let's say maybe you see like a 5-cost on level 7, you can maybe like, you know, give to your partner, or just like even anything that would like improve their board significantly. And then, yeah, also like you, it's not just like if you like be strong and want a win streak, then you can do it. A lot of times you need your partner to be strong as well, for you guys, right, to like, you know, help each other win streak. So yeah, there's a lot of things, I think. Like, Double Up.
You have to scout your opponents because people chase three stars really often. So if you two hold a pair each of 4-cost, they can never hit it. It's just like these kinds of things that are really important, in the game mode, like when I would love, okay, so we need a spectator feature in TFT for single, but
please,
we need an additional spectating feature for Double Up because I want to be able to listen to their comms. Like listening to their comms is so interesting. It's like when I wasn't casting, I was watching the other streams and I almost like missed my rotation back in because I was just listening to them talking. And I think it's just fascinating. Like, you know, by all means, the main broadcast would have its feature, but it'd be really great if we could, you know, listen into all these conversations. There's just so much potential in it, but, you know, it's also quite ambitious because we have yet to solve singles spectator.
Yeah, that's maybe someday we'll have a true spectator mode. Who knows? Yeah. Set 10, I believe it's coming.
We'll see, one thing at a time. We have yet to have our first LAN in TFT, okay? One thing at a time. Geez.
Yeah. All right. 2022, that's our year. I know we said that about this year, but next year is really going to be our year. LANs in TFT, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Yep, that's right. The world will change. But I got one more question for you. We've got, because Hextech Havoc is a, well, forget that. Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
Actually, real quick to note, can we go back to the previous thing? This is happening, and I just want to let people know because it's a, you know, it's something that I don't think is cool, and we need to call people out for it. But we do have a meme in the community about, you know, oh, like check PayPal or Venmo or OKage Business because win trading. Win trading actually does exist a lot in TFT, and it's happening right now with Double Up, because if you look at the first sentence or the second sentence, it's those who are the top teams that are ranked in each region will get invited, and that's actually incentivizing people to win trade right now. So, you know, they're trying to crack down upon it, but it's one of these things that we need to be vigilant as a community to like make sure that if that happens, we do not allow that to happen anymore. Yeah. We gotta make sure that those people are shamed, called out, reprimanded. Because if I can be also very transparent, 100%. This stuff happened in the Hearthstone community, and some players tried to get away with it, and it took a long time. Some reformed and ended up becoming like proper champions and tournament players, but some didn't, and will swear to the grave that they didn't, but they totally did hundreds of times. So like, it's one of these things that we have to be very intolerant about, because cheating has no place in TFT, in any competitive esport. And I just really like, I just hate seeing when it happens. So let's just be good about it.
If you really care about esports, if you really want to take it seriously, if you really want this community to grow, you don't win trade. That's just as simple as it. Winners don't win trade.
Sorry to hijack. I just wanted to like call it out while it's still fresh.
No, you're right. I wanted to have that very serious moment while Brontosaurus is wearing a waffle costume.
Yeah, and I'm wearing a pirate hat according to Ma, but I'm wearing a
pirate poop hat. I just got back from LARPing. Yep.
There you go.
Let's move on. Let's move on to the Alicoin tournament. This is exciting. And I actually signed up to play in this on Saturday.
This week?
I am going to try to qualify, but it's going to be a great event. Frodan, I know you're a big part of this, so why don't you tell us all about it?
Yeah, so one of my friends from Hearthstone, Ali Straza, she's a huge fan of TFT. She's been streaming it on and off, and she loves organizing tournaments. And I know a lot of people are thinking, like, what is Alicoin? It's a very long explanation, but essentially it's a cryptocurrency that is that's backed by the creators. And I'm not here to explain and talk about it. The whole point is that it's $10,000. You can cash it out immediately. It is redeemable in fiat, and there's a lot of ways to prove that. The important thing is that it's happening on the 27th, and there's no TFT tournaments happening this month. And so, you know, Milk and Soju and all of them were like, there's nothing to do in December. We just climb ladder and like, that's it. And that's TFT for December. So I was like, okay, let's try to make something happen. So I talked to different sponsors, and I was like, hey, let's put on a TFT tournament and I'll fund it myself. I'll just pay people. And so we got 16 players that'll be invited, plus the 8 people that qualified. 4 qualified last weekend. And there's some real killers. I looked at the qualifier list. It's like world finalists from EU and APAC and North America all signing up, plus a bunch of top challenger players. It's really hype. So low key, this is actually turning out to be like a TFT major. So Nature's from Wisdom signed up. He actually got to the final round, which was pretty dope. And I can't wait to see Doa compete. That'll be pretty fun. Good luck, man.
I'm gonna try the second qualifier this Saturday. I don't think you're gonna see me in the main event, but hey, I'm gonna give it a shot. It's always fun to compete, even if you don't get that far. I like competing. Definitely, I don't know. Brontosaurus, did you play in last week's qualifier? Or are you gonna go this week?
No, last week's was on the 12th, right? Or
yeah.
Oh yeah, because that was when the duo tournament was running.
I guess it was in the morning.
Yeah, it was in the morning, so would have been able to play. But I didn't know. I did not sign up. Actually, I didn't know this was going on. I'm not particularly attentive to Twitter, so I kind of missed the news. But it does seem like a really really fun, really interesting tournament. I think in general, like,
there's still time.
Maybe I will. I don't know if I can even play on the 27th.
I mean, if you're brave enough to take me on, that is. You know, you have to summon that courage, I guess. Yeah, you got to find it somewhere. Yep.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. But yeah, I just think in general, like, these types of tournaments are, like, there's nothing, like, holding, like there's nothing that says, like, you know, Rye can only be the only one that hosts tournaments. Because I think, like, anybody hosts a tournament and it's, like, a lot of high-level players, it'll still be like really hype and really fun to watch and good for the scene. But it's just like it just happens that, like, you know, nobody's really, you know, setting up these types of tournaments with like prize pools that incentivize a lot of people to like really try for them. So yeah, I think I'll probably sign up, but I don't know if I can actually even play on it. Anyway, yeah, I think it sounds exciting.
Yeah, it'll be a good time, and I agree. I think the most important thing out of all of this is that we're getting more decent TFT tournaments in the space, which is just what we need. We just need more opportunities for players to compete and win things and have fun and watch TFT. It's going to be a good time. So yeah, qualifier number two is on Saturday. Follow my progress, which probably won't take very long.
I can't wait to see Joe compete. It'll be great.
It's gonna be a great time for the other seven people in the lobby. What can I say? it'll be fun. I'll enjoy it. It'll be fun. Yeah. But yeah, that's something to look forward to for sure. But that's it for our esports talk today. Now it's time to go to everybody's favorite segment. It is the NA Top 10 Tier List, brought to you by Birdosaurus, who no doubt has spent days preparing for this in advance. You're ready to go, right? Who's it gonna be?
Yeah, I'm ready. I'm going to be honest with you. I find it, like, right now, I think I have, like, a very good sense of, like, who I think the top 10 players are. But it's pretty hard for me to rank them. Like, I think, especially, like, because I think, like, when I, like, do this type of tier list, I think, like, the best way to go about it is also to be, like, you know, who's best, like, right now. So, obviously, who's best set six. Right. And there hasn't been that much competitive scene in set six so far, so like obviously like a lot of this will also be just taking in like my thoughts or maybe like just about people as like just as a player from like set five, or just like even just bias from seeing how they played and like what I was impressed with. I think so. I find it really difficult to rank these like in the top 10, but I do have a good sense of who like the top 10 are. But yeah, I'm just gonna go, I guess. I think I'll start from the bottom. Actually, maybe it's not right to start. I don't
know. You start wherever you want.
Yeah, top, you know, bottom, I'll probably start like just names to come up top of my head and then put them like wherever I think and then maybe move them around later. I think I'll start with like, I guess some of the first ones that come to mind just because they're my friends are Setsuko, Goobums, and Spencer. And I do think they're all top 10. I think Setsuko is a player who like has very... He dominates the ladder. I mean, he's like turbo, like rank one, like the entirety of set six so far. Not really, but like, you know, all the time he's
up there
on the ladder. Yeah. He's rank one right now. And I think like for a while, he's been very good on ladder, but like not that great at tourney. So it's like been hard to like put him that high, but set six, he's been doing pretty well in tourneys, I think, like pretty decently. It's kind of hard for me. No, exactly, but he's definitely top 10, and I'd say he's probably like around the middle. So I'd probably put him like, I'll probably put Setsuko around like five right now, I'd say.
Okay.
And then Spencer, I just think is like a really solid player all around. Like, he does decent in tourneys and on ladder. I think he's just very solid. Like, there's not that much to say other than that. Like I think like you will always like I will always have confidence seeing him like do well on ladder, do well in tourneys. He always like seems to have a pretty good grasp of the meta, and I know like from talking to him, he does his due diligence. Like he tries to scout like what the Chinese players and the Korean players are playing. I guess I would probably put him at like six. Okay. And then Goobums, I feel like he's always been really, really smart about the game, and I talk to him probably the most like out of these three like about the game in general. I think like he's very like he's pretty good at like evaluating like what's like, for example, like what's going to be best for a comp, how to play specific comps, and stuff like that. And then like I remember like one of my like biggest impressions of him was like when he was first, when I like first getting known, which is when he was like playing Ahri in set four and like doing really, really well with Ahri, and he had all the tech, and like this is where you want to put, exactly where you want to put this unit, and this is exactly what items you want to build. And then and you don't, he talks like he's one of like the first ones to like talk about like how like to know like exactly what items you need and what items you don't need that like generally seem pretty good. So yeah, a lot of times when I'd be talking to him or just like playing the game, and he's just like, why do you have your unit there or something? Like, or you can please move this unit there. And so he's like, it seems like he's like fine tunes a lot of comps, but I feel like a lot of the times, I feel like some other players just like, I feel like, okay, no offense to Gooms, but like, I feel like he has a little bit less creativity, or like he gets stuck like trying to like optimize some comps than other players. Not because he has like less creativity, or I think he just like ends up like seeing the angles or like for like more easily. And then he like ends up like trying to go for those angles. Cause I feel like there's a lot of players that just like kind of slam whatever items and then do whatever. And then there are some players that are like they see these items and they're like, oh, I'm going to play this comp. I would put him around like 8 or 9, probably just like 9 for now.
All right. 8 or 9. Yeah. Which one officially? 8 or 9?
We'll go with 9 for now.
9. Okay. We're rounding down, I guess.
Yeah. I should say I feel like he has a more rigid play style, and just like, I guess it's maybe something it's also like a little bit of bias for me, because I'm more impressed when I see people do something like crazy and like do well with it. Whereas he does, like, a lot of times I see him play like standard comps and do really well with it, like play it optimally, but like he doesn't do like some as crazy stuff.
Okay.
So I think some other players, Pokigom and Ramkev, are some of like the newer players that I put in the top 10 list. I haven't seen that much of Pokigom playing like this set, but I was just really, I know I was really impressed with him from set 5. Especially I remember him in the finals world's qualifier. He had Velpaz 1 and he was like third with it or something like that. And it was just like, you have to like be positioning really well and stuff like that, because your Vel'Koz is not gonna make up for like if you misplace him or stuff. He's not gonna be able to like get to the carries that quickly if he's not positioned correctly. Right. So I think I would put like 3 and 4 for Pokigom and Ramkev. Actually sounds pretty decent. I'd probably maybe switch them, or I don't know.
Yeah, that's right. Don't let our producers dictate your list. You know, those are just placeholders. You can move them around wherever you want.
Yeah, I would actually, like, I haven't seen Pokigom that much, so I'd maybe put him at, like, 7 or 8, just because I'm not entirely sure. And then I'd maybe put Ramkev at, like, 4, but this is subject to change. Yeah, I also haven't seen that much of Ramkev play, like, this set, but I just, like, my impression of him is just, I don't know. I just have a good impression of him, and I think he's really good. Also, I've seen him in my games a lot. He always does really well. And yeah, I remember him playing. I was actually pretty mad this game. I was playing like 7 innovators when it was extremely broken, and then he was playing Tom Kench too, Harry. And then he got to the point where I didn't like. By the time I started fighting him, or like to the point where like he was pretty healthy, and like I didn't fight him that often either. And by the time I did fight him, he had like double Zephyr, double Shroud on my entire team, and my Dragon can't play the game because Zephyr and Shroud are like the two biggest counters to Dragon. You Shroud it, it doesn't cast. A lot of times it doesn't cast, and you Zephyr it. A lot of times you want to like solo frontline it, but then you can't do that. And even then, if you still end up getting hit by the Zephyr, pretty screwed for you. Anyway, that's like it's like probably, I think there's a lot of bias with these two ones because I don't have that much.
Fair enough.
Experience with them.
It's your own personal list, so it's supposed to be filled with bias. That's the point.
Yeah, that's true. And then obviously Ramblin and Robin. I think I would probably put Ramblin at 1 or 2. I think he's just really insane. It always feels like he knows what he's doing, just because like you see him in like pretty much any spot, and it feels like he will always, if he's in a, like any decent spot, it feels like he will always convert into like a good placement. Basically, like, if he has HP, if he has gold, if he has, you know, basically, I feel like there are a lot of games where I feel like I have something to work with, and then I just end up not really finding a comp. I feel like Ramblin will always find a comp that's good to play. And it, like, it doesn't really matter, like, what the meta is or, like, how many meta comps there are. Even if it's something off meta, you'll find a comp to play and he will do well with it. And then Robin, I think he's always been like an extremely solid player. I feel like Ramblin and Robin actually are pretty similar in play styles. Maybe because I don't know, maybe because they like, you know, talk to each other, or like obviously they're duo partners, do a lot.
They're pretty close, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like I get the similar impression from Robin, but I think I've been more impressed with what I've seen from Ramblin, so I'll probably put him higher. I'd probably put Ramblin at like, or sorry, maybe, okay, let's move Ramkev, Setsuko, and Spencer down one, and I'll put Robin at 4. Sorry for the
differences. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, obviously, Sox. He was my number one last time. I think Sox has like a very unique view of the game, and he has like a lot of interesting tech, I feel like. Like he's very good at finding tech and like very good at making use of units that other people like might not have. Like I remember when Akali's, like everybody knows Akali's broken, he was playing tank Akali. I remember like playing against it once in like duos, obviously it's in solos, but it's the same thing where I was playing with Spencer and he was doing it with Goobums, and I remember feeling like Spencer and I were in like a much better spot, and we were hitting 3-star 4 costs, and Sox was just playing this tank Akali, and I was like, I thought it was just like, you know, he happened to hit the units. And like, you know, he has the syndicate, so he's like playing around this. And it's like, I just feel like it turned out that, it was actually like really broken. And I was like, it was crazy because I was playing 3-star 4 costs, and I was almost losing to this Akali. And by almost losing, I mean like we pretty much should have lost that game. I don't think this was against, or sorry for the long-winded explanation about this one
no,
game.
It's all good. This is a glimpse into the mind of Birdosaurus.
Yeah, basically, there's a round where we should have died, except, like, basically one of us lost. We were 1 HP last life, and I think Spencer came into my board literally just in time. Like just before I was like supposed to take damage or something, like if I died like a millisecond sooner, I'm pretty sure we would have just lost. But anyway, so I would put probably Sox. I'll just put him as 1, I guess. Actually, you know what? I'll put Ramblin as 1, Sox as 2, and then yeah, Robin as 4.
Okay.
So, yeah. And then.
Two more spots to fill.
Two more spots, yeah.
Man, this is intense. Bert's like really being comprehensive about it.
No kidding. Look at how thoughtful that waffle is right now. That waffle is deeply thinking.
Yeah, I feel like I'm thinking too much about it. I feel like I should just say like I think this player is good and I should put him here. But yeah.
You can do it that way if you want to too.
Yeah. I think that's like kind of how I'm gonna do it for like the last two. Because honestly, like I'm trying to like give reasons, but like I'm trying to give reasons for these placements, but honestly, like most of this is just kind of my gut or like the kind of general feeling I've got.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
Yeah, I'll put Soju as 10th, and then like I'll put GVA as
3rd. Okay.
Actually, I don't know. You know what? You can just move this entire thing back up, and then I'll put GVA as 9, and then Soju as 10.
Okay, so Robin songs would go to 3 then?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay,
because I think I was thinking like I was definitely gonna put GV8 on this list, but I feel like I wouldn't put him 3rd.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll just run with it. I don't know. I feel like a lot of I feel like a lot of this is just kind of like it's probably just not great reasons for these placements, but overall, like, I feel like this is definitely like what my top 10 would be.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's reasonable. Okay, wow. Frodan, what do you think of the list?
I think it's really interesting, and this makes me feel like, we should one day pull Bert on, our Power Rankings podcast, because there's some similarities to my list, and there's also some not so similar things to my list. So I'm very curious, and I'm sure Bryce would love to debate you nonstop about whether or not you actually should be putting certain people that high or that low. So great stuff, man. Great stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, we always love the NA tier list, but now it's time to go on to another segment that people enjoy quite a bit. Mailbag. Now, I'm going to be honest, guys and girls and everybody, the pickings were kind of slim this week. We had to pick a question by Bupasaurus. What's your favorite dinosaur, Brontosaurus?
Oh God, I'm not like. Hey, I don't even know. Like,
as a fellow saurus,
why I chose this name for myself, but I kind of just ran with it. I don't really have like that.
Wait, we also need to ask questions in chat, by the way.
Oh, right. Almost forgot. Yeah, chat, ask questions to Brontosaurus as well. And if Bert chooses your question to answer, you will get a gift certificate. So ask it now. Bert, you don't need to watch chat too closely. Watch it a little bit, but we'll put questions for you to consider in Discord as well.
So
while you're musing over what dinosaur you like the most.
Yeah. Dude, I don't like. I feel like it's probably a water dinosaur. I don't know. I feel like the ones that are in the water are pretty cool.
Water dinosaur?
Yeah, I forgot what it was called. The one with like the really long neck in the water.
I'm googling it right now.
Let me just Google this.
Water dinosaurs. We got a lot to choose from. We've got
the Plesiosaurus. Okay, this one.
Which one?
The Plesiosaurus.
Remember? Oh, Plesiosaurus.
Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, Plesiosaurus. Okay. I'm
Plesiosaur. Sorry. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Plesiosaur.
Sorry.
What are you guys talking about?
It's a dinosaur. It's a real dinosaur.
No,
it was a real dinosaur. It doesn't exist anymore. It
kind
of looks like an alligator with flippers instead of feet.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. Somebody would probably.
My description.
Somebody can probably like. You have a dinosaur, and like I'd take a picture
dinosaur.
Of it, and I'd probably definitely say like, "Oh, this is a lot cooler." But like, whatever.
So do you like the Jurassic Park films?
Oh, I did not watch them. Yeah.
What? Well, don't watch any of the new ones. The new ones are terrible. But go back and watch the original Jurassic Park. That was one of the best movies ever made.
Yeah,
Don't watch the Jurassic World stuff. Don't watch that though.
maybe I'll definitely go back and watch it then.
We'll never get sponsored by them now, but that's okay. The movies are terrible anyway. Well, Frodan, do you have a favorite dinosaur?
Brontosaurus. He's my favorite dinosaur.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
In a fight between Brontosaurus and Bupasaurus, which tyrant lizard would reign supreme?
I'm not very good in a fight. That's what
No offense, Bert, but I'm pretty sure Boop has done lots to survive and their lifetime, and I'm excited to see. I mean, I would actually be excited to see the showdown.
Well, we'll see if we can get a HBO special or something like that.
That's right.
That'll be a good time. Yeah. All right. Well, there it is. The Plesiosaurus on the screen in all its glory going after squid. Apparently, scientists surmise that it loved to eat squid. There you go.
Okay.
The more you know. Who said this podcast wasn't educational outside of TFT? Nobody. That's right. Plesiosaurus.
Certainly nobody right now. Plesiosaurus.
Not at the moment. No, you can't question that. Well, check out Discord, Bert. We've got a question in Discord for you to answer. This chat's not cooperating today.
If I were potato chip, what flavor would I be? Rizet M716. A potato chip, what flavor would I be? I'll probably just go with like my favorite flavor, which is... Actually, I don't know. What is my favorite flavor? I'll just go with barbecue. That's a classic.
Okay.
It's maybe not.
Is it?
Like, oh, is it? I like it. Barbecue potato chips. I don't know. I feel like that's one of the ones people talk about the most, or like one of the ones people mention the most when talk about potato chips.
Okay, it's your choice. I won't question you.
Yeah. I'll just go with barbecue.
All right.
I guess it's not as not as classic as most people, I have thought, but I don't know. It's pretty solid, I would say, and I like it a lot. So yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah. All right. Well, congrats to Rizm 716. Yeah. Your question was chosen out of a pool of hundreds.
Nice job.
Yeah, way to go. There's some weird potato chips flavors in Korea, man. I just got back from there. They have like sweet mayo Pringles and stuff like that. It's wild over there. It's crazy. But that's going to do it. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, if you've never like traveled internationally, they have some really interesting take on some of your favorite like American snacks. Like I go to like I went to Korea, like the flavor of Doritos is like mind blowing. Like I'm like, what?
Oh.
I don't even understand what's going on. Yeah, but like regular candies and chips and snacks that you like think you understand, like all the possible things that you can get in America and international one, they have different spices and flavors all the time. It's pretty crazy.
There's green tea Kit Kats in Korea. It's like chocolate bar, but it's like a green chocolate. Yeah.
I've actually seen those like, I don't know, like around me at least.
Oh, really?
They were pretty good, yeah.
Oh, maybe they made it over to the US now. Popular enough over there. That's interesting.
Yeah, there you go.
Cool. All right. Well, the more you know. And on that note, it's time to wrap up our final Team Fight Talk Show of 2021. And what a show it's been. Thank you for joining us again, Brutosaurus. Before you go, any shout outs, any props you want to give, any things you're doing you want people to know about, the floor is yours.
I guess I would like just shout out to all my to Ubum, Spencer, Setsuko, and Sarah Lynn. Like these are the main TFT people I talk to. And so like I don't know, it's just definitely made TFT a lot more fun to like a lot of people you're close to in the scene. And then they also like I don't know, like Gubum especially always like tries to get me to play and then like encourages me to play and stuff like that. And then like if he thinks I'm struggling, like he helps, although I don't really feel like I've been like I'm not that high LP on ladder, but like it's like whatever. Like but yeah.
Stay with us, Bert.
It's been very helpful.
I didn't hear the end of that.
Oh, like I'm not very high LP on ladder. But also it's like it's more of like when I lose a game or like don't do well, I just like stop for the day. But like before it was like I would just keep grinding and then like try to get my LP. But yeah, like basically normally I wouldn't be fine with being like 1k LP, but like I'm fine with being 1k LP right now.
For now, and then one day you're gonna look at the leaderboard and see Frodian above you, Bert, and it's gonna give you all the motivation in the world.
No, what's gonna happen is one day they're gonna take like the qualifiers for the next tournament, like the ladder snapshot for the next tournament are gonna be coming up. And I'm going to realize I need to be top 32.
That's true. It's true. Whenever Burr's needed to climb, he climbs. So it's going to be pretty interesting to see.
You're going to see me win the Alicoin tournament, and then it's going to be like I'm vaulted to stardom, you know, set six champion. It's happening.
That's right. Yeah. Doa cast and play set six worlds. It's weird.
Prage. Yep. At the same time. Frodan, any final thoughts to close out the year here?
It's been a great episode. It's been a great year of Teamfight Talk Show. You know, the show's grown so much since we started it, like a long time ago now. And it's cool that we're doing, you know, advanced things like augments. Really glad that everyone showed up. Next week, we're going to be doing the rap power rankings thing with Bryce. And then the week after, we'll be putting on the Alicoin tournament. So there's still a lot of TFT to look forward to, even though everyone's having the holidays. But it's been a wonderful year, and I can't wait to see what 2022 has in store.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Thanks again to Wisdom and Giant Slayer for putting this great show on. It's so much fun to do. We get to talk to so many fun people, and it's so much fun to have Frodan as my co-host and you lovely people out there in Twitch chat. And that's it. That's the year of TFT for this show. But obviously, like Frodan said, Alicoin tournament coming up. And there's lots of TFT to go play out of there on the ladder. So obviously 2021 hasn't really ended up being the year we all hoped it would be in a world sense. So we hope you're doing well regardless. Hope you get to spend some great time with family and friends on the holiday. Or at least hang out in Brutosaurus's chat. There's cool people there too, I would imagine. But until next year, stay safe, have a great time playing and watching TFT. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time.